Good morning.
Well, good morning, Faye. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Christmas is over.
I know.
Time to move to New Year's.
I know. It's just like the celebration just keeps going. This is like that lull where it's just like, okay, everybody's kind of left the party, but we're still trying to keep the party going because we just don't want to go home.
That's exactly right. And then I've heard all the stories about people wearing their pajamas on Christmas Day.
Really?
I mean, this could be something new.
Ooh, it's a new casual Christmas. That might be the thing.
A new casual Christmas sounds to me like. Wow.
Well, you know, I mean, why not? You know, you think about it for a second. It's like, well, there's nothing wrong with that. Before you know though.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah. I mean, it won't be too much longer before we just, you know, head out on like a random Tuesday, go to the office in our jammies. And you know.
Now, that might be interesting. You know, one of my granddaughters told me, she said, she got some of those new fancy pajamas. She said, you know, I just want to be a kid. She's 14. She
oh,
said,
wow.
You know, I don't want to grow up. I said, well, okay. And she said, you know, I'm going to wear these pajamas to school. I go, can you do that? She said, I'm going to do it.
We're going to find out.
We're fixing to find out if she'll be sent home or not. But they were real cute and had all this, you know, teddy bears and things on them.
Oh.
She said, I'm wearing them to school. She said, I don't want to grow up.
Wow.
Oh, I think that's funny that, you know, at 14, she suddenly says that.
Yeah.
You know, that she doesn't want to grow up.
She's only 14 and she's saying things like that.
Yeah, like, she doesn't want to grow up.
Wow.
Well, I think she suddenly realizes that she's a teenager. And that's kind of scary.
Oh, yes. When you realize that, uh-oh, I really am growing up, and that means responsibility and all that. Yeah, I would imagine. I can't remember that age, but but I'm
Yeah,
I'm
it
sure.
was a little while ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. but anyway, you had a good Christmas, it sounds like.
I had a good Christmas. The llamas had a good Christmas. You know, the puppy was... very well-mannered during the whole thing.
Really?
You know, I wondered how she would act. Bella was very sweet, very nice. She got up and sat by people and watched. She didn't tear anything up, didn't rummage through the packages. I thought she might do it.
Yeah, she might get curious and start, you know, busting up presents.
That's right. And she didn't tear up anything. And she was very well-behaved, and she would sit by people. She'd go over and talk to him, and she was a darling. She really was.
And this was your first Christmas with her, right?
This is our first Christmas with her. She's the best puppy I ever owned. I would recommend a miniature Bernedoodle to anybody, whether you have kids, grandkids, or no kids. She is a delight, and she's so sweet, and she's happy all the time. That's what I like.
Oh.
She's always ready to play. She's always got her tail going. And then she gets the zoomies. And you better get her outside quick because she'll run just as far and wide as she can.
Wow. I always like when they get that.
I've never seen a dog with zoomies, but she does get the zoomies. And then she'll take off and run as fast as she can go.
Oh, my. It's almost exhausting to watch it because you think, oh, I can't do that anymore.
That's right. And you think, how far will she go? Will she just run as far as she can go? And zigzag across the field, then she comes back. But she has to have her moments.
Of course. Yes.
Yeah.
Did Santa Claus come for her, too?
Yes.
Of course.
Santa Claus loves her.
Yeah.
You know, she has a little dog that she sleeps with and a little rhino.
Oh.
So that's the type of thing she loves.
Neat.
And I don't understand. Maybe a psychologist for dogs could tell me. But every once in a while, she'll take either her dog outside or her rhino when she goes to the bathroom.
Really?
She'll take it outside and lay it down, go to the bathroom. And I'll say, you forgot your baby. And she'll go back and get it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. So she's almost like a little person is what it sounds like.
Well, I mean, I don't understand why she takes, you know, her little animals outside with her to go to the bathroom. I mean, I don't understand. if she thought somebody's going to get them and take them away from her, or if she just thought they need to go with her.
Maybe she just likes them so much, or maybe like when she takes it outside, it's her way of taking like a magazine to the restroom with her. I don't know.
Well, maybe so. I don't know. But she'll go back and get them and gladly bring them right back in the house.
Wow. And you can actually say you left it outside and she'll go get it and bring it back.
She'll go get it. If she forgets, I'll say you left your baby outside. She'll go back and get it.
Wow. That's impressive. Jeez.
Yeah. She is the smartest puppy I've ever owned.
Wow.
She can dance. She stands up and dances round and round.
Really?
She sits down. She lays. She'll do all kinds of things.
My word. How old is she? She's what, 6 months?
Yeah, about six months now. Yeah.
Wow. That's a great age. Is she chewing like all the furniture and all that?
Oh, she's already destroyed all that. she's chewed on my bed, on my little step stool, on the dining room table. I mean, we bought all this stuff, sour stuff, to keep her from it. But when her teeth were so bad, she was having a problem. She chewed on everything. Didn't matter what it was. There'll have to be a few repairs made.
Wow.
Yes.
Well, I know that's annoying, and it can be expensive, but I guess that's part of the process.
If you get a puppy, you've got to be prepared.
Yeah.
And we all forget what puppies are like, that their teeth hurt, that they, you know, need teething rings. They're like a little baby. They need everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Boy, it's been a long time since we've had a little puppy like that. So, you know, I forget, you know, those things. You remember back, it's like, okay, well, we've had all these other dogs in the past. It's like, oh, they were this and they were that. But we forget about the teething process and the chewing process and all that. But it doesn't sound like the deterrent worked. She just didn't care.
It did not work well. Wow. Whatever it is, you know, if it's wood, she was chewing on it.
Oh, my. Well, is she still in that phase, or is she coming out of it?
No, she's kind of went past that now.
Oh, good, good. Well, then that's nice.
She's into other things now.
she's getting into more like adult puppy things.
Yeah, she's got her. She has her priorities.
She has her priorities. Wow. It sounds like it's good to be her.
Yeah, can you imagine being a puppy? Wow.
Yeah.
All you do is play all day long.
Yeah, play and sleep and eat, and that's it.
That's exactly right.
They got it made. So the rest of the celebration was good. Was it good with family and all that? Everybody came over?
It was
good
with family. It was a fun time. It was a tiring time. I'd forgot how much there is to do. You know, you've got all the presents to wrap. You've got all the presents to buy. Then you have to cook, folks.
Oh, geez.
And somewhere along the way, I must have forgot about that. How many hours it takes.
Well, now, I know.
I must have thought it was a two-hour deal, you know?
No. It's like Thanksgiving all over again.
It is. I mean, you're looking at 8 hours of work, I'll tell you.
Yes. Yeah. Between the prep and the cooking and the cleanup, it's a full-day thing, whether you spread it over 2 days.
It is a full-day thing. Yeah. And guests always leave as soon as they eat, if you mention dishes.
Yes. If you ever want to get people to leave.
Oh, I need to get home before dark. Oh, yeah, sure you do.
Yeah.
Oh, you rats.
Didn't mention that until I said, hey, let's clean up. Oh,
that's right.
No, we got to go.
That's right. We've got something to do.
I'm a little bit surprised that you actually went to cook on Christmas after all the Thanksgivings that we've talked about. It's like, no, I'm not going to do it. It's too much hassle. It's too much work. It's nonsense. It's silly. And it's so exhausting. I'm surprised you actually went for cooking on Christmas Day.
I should have had my head examined. I'm going to have it examined this year, and hopefully next year there'll be some changes made.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hopefully I'll come to my senses.
I would imagine probably everybody's going to remind you next year about whatever happened this year is to not do it again.
That's right. No more staying in the kitchen working.
No.
You've got two choices, folks, and I'm going to take one of them.
Well, I know for Thanksgiving you can go places, you know, like the country club, and there's places that are open, but they're not open on Christmas Day, so your options
are limited. It is limited, but you know there is people that cook for a living.
There are. Yeah, they do. All day, every day. Even on Christmas.
They do, and they will come to your house. And they need to come to my house next year.
All right.
I mean, I will be on it early, let me tell you.
All right. Well, I know. Okay, so now next year, when you go to book the lights, to put up the lights, it's going to be a light guy and a food guy. You're going to be calling two people.
That's right. Two different guys. And the light guy did a good job. I was very pleased with him. And mine didn't cost as much as everybody else's, so I'm really excited.
Yeah, yeah. So now, are there already scheduled to come out and take them down, or do you have to call them?
Oh, yes, that's part of the price.
Okay.
They charge one price to bring them, put them up, and take them down.
Now, are you one of those that goes into, because there's some people that think it's bad luck to go into the new year with all the Christmas stuff up. You have to take the trees down, the lights down
before. I'm not superstitious at all.
So you're good going into the new year.
I want them up till after New Year's. You always have your lights up till after New Year's.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
It's still the holidays.
Yeah, I mean, you want your lights to shine till after New Year's, probably the 6th or 7th. That first week, I would think everybody would have their lights still up.
Yeah, but now you get into March, because we've all got the people that still have their lights up in March, and that's a bit that might be a little bit pushing it too much.
I think that's a little tacky. I don't think you should go that far.
It's a little tacky.
Yes.
Wow. We had a neighbor once. It's been several years, but they used to take their lights down around October and then put them right back up in November. It was weird. We don't even know why they even bothered, but it was...
Why did they even bother?
I don't know.
And the other reason, I would never leave them up all year. If we have hail, which you know we do every once in a while, it will ruin all of your lights. You won't have any left.
Oh, yeah. All that hail will pop those light bulbs.
Oh, yeah. The hail will take care of those lights.
Ooh, wow. Yeah, you can get them down before all that happens. Jeez.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad Christmas was well, and everybody came over, and it sounds like it was a great time. And now we get into New Year's. Do you have any New Year's like superstitions or anything like that you do for good luck?
No. You know, I am not superstitious. You know, I'll tell you why. Years ago, a black cat ran in front of my car.
Uh-oh.
And I was just worried to death. I said, I'll have so much bad luck. And, you know, I got me a black cat, and I never thought about it after that.
So you're fine walking underneath ladders and breaking mirrors and
no,
all that?
No, I don't walk under ladders. I don't want to, you know, add to it.
You're not going
to
tempt it, but...
No, let's don't tempt it, but I just, you know, I'm not overly... I don't put salt over my shoulder, you know, all that sort of thing.
Yeah. But I've heard some crazy things that people do. I think at some point, probably through the years, we've tried all of them, and it didn't make any difference. So we don't do it anymore.
It didn't work, did it? Didn't have a thing to do with it.
No. Nothing changed. So we're kind of out for that. But some people swear by
it. Well, now, let me tell you something. I knew my car was smart, but I just didn't know how smart. You know, I was in a parking lot this week of Kroger, and I was looking for a parking place. And all of a sudden, it comes on the screen. It said, take your hands off the wheel, put it in reverse, and we'll park it.
Really?
And I looked down at that, and I go, what?
Yeah.
I did not know it would park your car, you know, and back it up and park it.
Really?
For you. It will.
Now, is this real, or is this? Did you have a dream?
This is the honest truth.
Are you serious?
That's what it said, and I didn't do it. I thought, you might be just teasing. You know, this might be a joke, and I didn't want to tempt fate.
Yeah.
But that's what it said.
Oh, my word.
It said, take your hands off the wheels, put it in reverse, we'll park it.
Oh, wow. I didn't. Was there a space?
I didn't even know they knew I was looking for a parking spot.
I know it. It's like everything about that makes me nervous.
It made me real nervous.
Oh, wow.
I did not know that a car knew what you were doing.
I didn't know that either. I mean, how would it know that you're in a parking lot or looking for a space? Was there an open space near it or?
I don't know. It must have been behind me.
Wow.
Because that's what it said. It said, take your hands off the wheel, put it in reverse, and we'll park it.
Wow.
I was scared to tempt it to see if it really would.
Yeah, I would be too. I've never heard of such a thing. I didn't know that was a real possibility. Oh, wow.
It's an option on my car, obviously, that it will park your car for you.
And is that the first time you've ever seen that, or is that the...
That's the first time I don't usually go into a busy parking lot like that. And I'd driven around a couple of times, and all of a sudden it came on and said that to me. Take your hands off the wheel, put it in reverse, we'll park the car. There's a parking space available.
I believe if I had seen something like that, I'd have put it in park, opened the door, and walked away.
You would have had a panic attack about that talking to you.
Yeah, I would have. I'm like, who's watching me? Can you see me? Is there are you watching? What's going on here? It would make me paranoid. Wow.
Well, I couldn't believe it said that.
Yeah, I didn't even know. I've never
heard
of it. I was
in shock, and I said, I'm not doing that.
No.
I immediately, you know, made that go away.
Wow. Sometime you're going to have to go into a parking lot and do it just to see what happens, because now I'm curious. I'm terrified, but I'm curious at the same time.
Well, I was terrified, too.
Jeez.
And I wasn't going to let it do it, because I thought, what if it messes up and hits another car?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, golly. You know,
how can it see? I mean, what electronic deal can see in my car and knows the parking spots back there and going to park the car?
Yes. How does it know, one, that you're looking for a space? How does it know where there was one that maybe you didn't see? Or how does it, and how is it going to, like, get itself back in there by itself? I mean, it sounds like.
It said take your hands off the wheel.
Take your hands off the wheel.
Take your hands off the wheel. Don't help us.
Wow.
Don't do anything.
Get out of the way.
And I never back into a parking space. Never.
Really?
I know men do it all the time. I never do it.
Wow. I don't know what to think about that. So clearly your vehicle was designed by a man because it was going to back
in. It was designed for a man because they wanted to back it in for me and put it in the space. It said, we have located the space. Take your hands off the wheel.
Oh, my.
Put it in reverse. We'll park it. Oh. Oh, no, you won't.
Oh, Lord. That almost sounds like, okay, put the window down, put your hands out the wheel, and step out of the vehicle.
That's right. That's kind of the way I felt. I go, they have taken over my car.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Wow. That would scare me because I don't know how it even knows that you're looking for a space and how it would find one and park it for you. That's
well, it must have known because I'd driven around a couple of times and they could tell I wasn't on the road.
Wow.
And this, I mean, how would it know all this?
This technology these days, this is kind of scary to me. It's neat, it's convenient, but boy, it's also kind of scary in some ways. You know, I saw there was a thing about all the technology that knows everything about us. There was a thing a couple of years ago where somebody did a test. They bought a cell phone and they never turned it on. They just went from the store. They kept it off. They kept it in the box. Didn't even turn it on. Did all kinds of things. They rode a bike. They took an Uber, and then they walked, and then they went to a mall and went from the first floor, went to the second floor. And then they took that phone, still didn't turn it on, to an expert, and they downloaded information, could tell them everywhere they went, could tell when they were on a bike, could tell when they were walking, could tell even that they went from the ground floor to the second floor because of the elevation change. They knew everything, and they didn't even turn it on. Technology is scary. Yeah.
That is, technology is scary.
And when you're driving a car.
We might have gone too far with this technology.
We might have gone too far. Yeah. Goodness gracious.
Now, if it had called me by name, I'd have jumped out of the box.
Oh, that's the line. That's what it would have
taken. That's it. That's the line right there. If it said Faye, I would have just jumped out of the car.
Oh, wow.
I said, I'm getting out of here.
Faye, oh, strap yourself in. Hold on.
That's right. We'll be driving for you.
Oh, wow. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com. There's a lot of good things on there. There's references on there. There's information on life settlements. There's information on annuities. There's information about the company. It's just a lot of good information if they go to our website.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we talk about it, you know, on Saturdays, all these different options, and sometimes people don't always retain everything because, I mean, it can be a lot of information, especially for somebody who maybe has never done something like this before. There's a ton of information, something that they can reference, things that they can look at and kind of maybe jog their memory. So, yeah, it is a great resource. And then people can always listen to shows on demand. It's like, oh, my gosh, Faye said something about this last week. What was it? They can go back and listen to old shows. And then obviously people can always call you and talk to you if they have any questions. So,
and then if they're out of town, they can go back and do it. If
they just
missed one, they can do one. If they've missed several weeks, they can go back and listen to the whole thing.
That's true. I forgot about that. We don't always talk about the archives, but people
That's
do
right.
that all
we
the
forget,
time.
We forget about archives. We forget about that there's references on there, that there's information like people that are new coming over, they can go and study it, what a life settlement is all about. It tells everything, all the rules, regulations, how it works. Then you can go over to the annuity side, and it tells you about annuities.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's a lot of information that people need.
We even have a section on there if people want to sell their policy, they can sell it to you direct, which we don't talk about all the time either. So that's an option.
We never mention that. There's so many things we forget sometimes,
I know.
You're right. They can sell their policy to us. If you're sick, if you have cancer, you know, we'd be willing to buy it. We'll look at it and see, you know, because that's what we do. We buy insurance policies on people that are sick that have stage 4 cancer.
Yeah. Yeah, and so sometimes when you can eliminate, I guess, maybe the middleman, get the broker out of the picture, it ends up being a much better deal for everybody. Not only for you know, what the deal will actually render financially, but also time-wise, because you don't have the delays, you don't have, you know, it just makes it a much more streamlined process.
Yes, it is, because if you can come direct to us, and you don't have to go through that broker, as he said, that we've eliminated one person. So the brokers get a lot of money to bring these policies.
Yeah, they do.
So you're going to get more money for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is always, I mean, that's the whole goal for anybody anyway who's trying to sell their policy. So, you know, it is. It's a wealth of information for life settlements. I guess it's always easy just to hear kind of like when you talk about it, when you go through the process itself. How does it generally work? We don't always kind of run through it, you know, from step A.
Well, we bid for these policies. They don't just fall in our lap. All these people send us policies. We look at them. We see if they meet our criteria. They've got to be 74 years or younger. They've got to have stage 4 cancer. We've got to have a good life expectancy on them. If it's $1 million or more, we have to have 2 life expectancies because we want to, you know, be sure we're right. And then we look at it. We look and see if it's 24 months, 18 months, 30 months, long it is. And if it meets our criteria, then we're going to look at the premium stream. What are the premiums on it? And sometimes they'll try to get one past us that has a high premium. So we're on the lookout for the premium at all times. And maybe it has to be converted. We never talk about that. But lots of times they'll bring us a policy, and it's a term, but the term's fixing to run out in 4 years, 5 years. So we look and see if it needs to be converted to keep the premium down, or if the premium will go another 15 or 10 years.
Wow.
So all that has got to be considered.
Well, now we've never, I don't think we've ever really talked about conversion. What does the conversion process look like? Is that?
Okay. If it's term now, you want permanent insurance. Mm. So it becomes a whole life policy. Okay. And if the premium is right, we can switch it over. Now, sometimes conversion is not good, but most of the time, conversion is a good thing. We'll convert it to permanent life insurance, and that way it'll never go up. The premium will never go up.
So that
sometimes you have to watch it. Sometimes we'll buy a policy, and it'll stay the same for maybe 5 years, but it may go up after that with their age. So we want a level term, and then we want a level permanent life insurance that cannot go up on us.
Wow. This is a whole new realm I didn't even know it existed. Oh, my.
Yeah, it's real important to know all these things because sometimes you buy a policy and then you get to looking at it and it'll say, oh, it's not going to stay the same. As they get older, the premium's going to go up. And some of our older policies have done that. It went up. And the ones we're buying now, they're not going to go up. Because we're buying, you know, a different type of a whole life policy that will not ever go up. We know what it is going in, and sometimes we have to do that to get the lower premium. Sometimes conversion will give you a lower premium than what we have now.
Really? So when you look at it,
yeah,
and it's, say, a term policy, and then you convert it, does that essentially either lower the premium or lock it in? Or
yes. It's going to do one or the other. Sometimes it locks it in at the same rate, or it may be a lower rate, because lots of times they'll send us one and we'll go, no, we're not going to buy that. The premium's too high. And they said, well, let us get you the conversion rate, what it is if we convert it.
Really?
So then sometimes the conversion rate is a lot better, so we go ahead and when we buy it and go ahead and convert it then. And then sometimes we don't convert it for a couple of years.
Really? So
depending on what we have to do to keep the premium down.
Interesting.
And lately, as you know, the premium that we've had has been like less than 2% on most of them.
Oh, yeah. It's been super low. It's been great. When you get, say you buy a policy, I don't know how to ask what I'm asking. Is there like a, like, okay, if it's going to go up in, say, 5 years, is there a threshold where you either not do something or you'll go ahead and convert it, or do you convert it ahead of time or wait until it gets closer to that?
Sometimes we don't have to convert it till it gets close. If it's 5 years away, then we're safe. You know, we know what it's going to be. We know it's not going to be too high. We've already checked all that. But let's say it's 2 years and it'll save premium, then we'll go and convert it right then when we buy it.
Okay. Because I know,
so it depends which it is.
If you're looking at policies that are, say, 24 months, I mean, I would imagine that's probably not a large window. It's not like you're sitting on a policy that you're going to have for, you know, 10 years or 20 years or something like that. Considering the types of policies that you're buying, I know you're looking at, you know, purchasing policies that are going to mature a little bit quicker than those old ones, I guess, the way you put them. so I didn't know if there was like a thing, okay, this is going to, you know, change in 18 months, even though the policy may be like 12, or I didn't know if you know, went ahead and, I don't know, preemptively.
Well, sometimes
convert.
We need to. We have to look and see how much it'll be in 2 years. So let's say that it was going to be a better premium in 2 years than it is now. We might go ahead and do it right now.
Hmm. Wow. And that essentially either lowers the rate or locks it in for people. I didn't know that.
That's right.
Wow.
Yeah. Lots of times it's going to lower it because maybe it was 3% now. And we don't really want to be at 3. So the conversion maybe was at 2 or less than 2. So we would go ahead and convert it and not take the risk.
Wow. Do you ever bid on a policy or buy a policy contingent on conversion. We won't buy, this was like, we won't buy it at this rate because it'll be a 3%. But if we buy it, it has to be converted, which will take it down to say 2 or less than 2. Is there a contingency thing built in?
Oh, well, if we talk to them, we feel like it has to be converted now. We'll say we want it converted as we buy it.
Wow.
So they'll change it over as we're buying it for us.
Wow. I apologize for all these questions, but it's just, this is a whole new realm that I didn't even know even existed. So this is just kind of, it kind of like blows my mind.
Now, sometimes you need to go ahead and convert it now, and then sometimes we know that in 5 years, so we mark it in the computer and say, okay, in 5 years, if this person lives that long, you know, we would have to convert it. And what do we want to do about it?
Wow.
But most of them is set. Most of the time it's a term life policy. It's got another 10 years to go.
Oh, okay.
And we check the dates on everything. We want to know if it's 5 years, 10, 20, or if it's, like you say, if it's fixing to run out.
Okay.
So we find out all that. Remember, we get a copy of the policy when we buy these. So, yeah. And I don't think we've ever discussed that part. We have a copy of the policy before we ever buy it. So
wow.
We know what it calls for. We know what the terms are. We know what when it's going to run out or if it's going to be great like it is or if it'll have to be converted. So we know all that up front.
All right.
We look at it and make that determination right then.
Wow. So you actually have the actual policy itself.
We have the actual policy. We know what year they bought it, and that's the most important part. We want to be sure they bought it before they got cancer. We've got one right now that we're checking that we're not sure that the lady told them she had cancer before she took out the policy.
Mm.
And if we find out that she did not tell them, we cannot buy that policy because they will not pay. If she storied to them and didn't tell them she had cancer when she took out the policy.
Oh, so that would void the whole thing.
It will void it, absolutely. You've got to... if you've got cancer and you tell them, they're not going to issue the policy.
Wow.
So if she didn't tell them in order to buy the policy, it's over. She will never be able to do anything with that policy.
Wow.
And if she should die and they check it, which they will, they won't pay off.
Wow. So she may have just, you know, paid on a policy that's has no good.
Up.
Wow.
Maybe. We're going to find out. But we always check that. Most of the policies we buy, they've had them 10 years or 5 years, so we don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
But every once in a while, you know, like the guy that had gotten a divorce and was trying to sell us his policy. His wife got it in the divorce. He didn't own the policy. There wasn't anything the old boy could do.
It wasn't even his to sell.
It wasn't his to sell. And there he is up there touting that policy, you know?
Wow. Did he know that, or was he just honestly...
he knew.
Oh.
He just thought that we were dumb enough we weren't going to check.
So he tried. He knew what he was doing. He just tried.
But that's like the Bidner policy. You know, we bought our first policy. This other one, it was down to 10 months. It sounded so good. You know, we raised all this money to get it. And we asked him why, you know, he wanted to sell it, you know, when it wasn't going to be too long before she died. And he said, I have a great opportunity to make an investment.
Oh, geez.
And I go, that don't sound too good for my husband.
Yeah,
I mean, you know.
Those are not the words that you generally hear.
That's not what I'd have told anybody, you know. If he'd said, we need the money or, you know, something like that, well, you know, we'd have been fine with it. If he'd said, you know, I need the money for my wife's treatment, you know. And then she goes to the doctor. And she's sick. She can't even do the chemo.
Yeah, and his concern is an investment.
Make an investment.
Oh wow!
You know,
I don't imagine that. You probably hadn't heard that before. I would guess.
Yeah, that wasn't too solid a marriage. I didn't think after all these years.
Doesn't sound like it. No. Oh wow.
No, but there's a lot of things to consider when we're buying policies. How much profit can we give the clients? That's a big thing. We don't talk about that a lot, but we always look and see if it's going to be profitable for the client. If we can make them enough money, we're going to buy the policy. If we don't, if it's marginable, we're not going to buy it, you know, because we have a set amount we figure they should make according to the terms of the policy. So that's how we bid it, as to what we can make for them and what we can buy it at. And then if we're bidding it and it gets too high and the client's not going to make very much, we're going to pass. We passed on a couple last week before Christmas that we just couldn't make the numbers work. Mm-hmm. You know, the bidding was going up and the clients were going to make less and less because the broker, you know, thinks he has to have so much money.
Mm. So they almost like drive people out of the market with these things.
They drive us out lots of times along with everybody else.
Wow.
And I can't imagine one of the policies we lost out of California, you know, we had bid it as high as we could, and a mutual fund came in and overbid us.
Jeez.
Now, they're not going to make much money, but I guess the mutual fund company doesn't care.
Maybe not.
We couldn't figure out how they could overbid us and still come out on it.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like they bid themselves out of any kind of profit at all.
I think they did. I think when they go to their clients and say, this is all you're going to make, the clients are probably going to tell them, you know, pass me on this.
Yeah, they may not be able to fill it after they
get it. But when
it's
other people's money, the mutual fund has no money of their own in it. It's all customer money.
Yeah, they don't have any.
They make some crazy decisions sometimes.
I would imagine probably when people's own money is at stake, their maybe decisions or maybe risk level changes probably dramatically, I would say. But
I think it must, because, you know, we've had several mutual funds that were sued because they guaranteed them 8%, and they didn't look at the policies that they bought 10-year paper. You can't give them 8% if the income is not coming in.
Jeez.
I mean, you've got to have income off those policies. So if they'd have bought short term, you know, 18 months, 24 months, they would have had the money to pay the interest. But they didn't. They'd bought 5, 7, and 10-year paper.
Wow. So people are just out buying things willy-nilly, is what it sounds like.
Mutual fund companies sometimes get carried away.
That's a nice way to put it.
A little bit excited, you know, and they just keep going. That's what mutual fund companies do.
Wow. All right. What about annuities? I know we're coming up on the end of the year. Are the bonuses still happening?
The bonuses are still good. And I wish I'd have got the man's name. This is an important story. This guy's one of the richest men in America. And they ask him what he invests in, only index funds, like what we do in annuities.
Really?
And all of his millions and millions and jillions of millions is in index funds.
Really?
He's not doing mutual funds. He's not doing stocks. He's doing indexes like we do. And he said that's how he made all these millions and millions, with index funds only.
Really?
And this was on the news last week.
Wow.
I can't remember his name. I should have written it down.
He's one of the richest people.
That's all he does is indexes.
Interesting. So I would imagine he's got a well-diversified portfolio then, I would guess.
He does. And he hasn't lost any money, and he's worth billions. He's not the richest man like Bezos, but he is very, very wealthy. And he said he did it all with index funds. And they said, well, what about mutual funds? He said, no. He said, I do not own any mutual funds.
Wow.
People forget at the end of the year, you know, the mutual funds, whatever it's made, is going to tax you. You're always taxed at the end of the year on mutual funds.
Mm. Yeah.
A lot of people don't know that.
And so
they buy them and get taxed on them.
Yeah, and that'll eat up some profit. So you avoid all those taxes, especially when they're unnecessary.
When they're in an annuity, it's all tax deferred. You're not paying on anything till you take it out. So that's what I love about annuities. Anybody can own an annuity. You can have the income off of it. You can delay the income for years and take it as a lump sum. Or when you get old enough, you can say, I need monthly or I need annual income. And you can get it out of an annuity. I think it's one of the safest products in America. I've got some people right now fixing to sell their business They're considering doing annuities.
Wow.
Because it's safe for any age. An annuity is good for anybody. I don't care how old you are.
And you get the excitement of the stock market. So if the market goes up, your annuity goes up. But if the market crashes, your annuity has a safe
stop gap. It's got that stop gap. It's not going to go down. It'll just sit still. So if everything crashes, you just sit there and it'll recover. But if you're in the stock market, you lose that much money. You know, the other day when the stock market fell so bad, people lost a lot of money that day.
Yeah, they did.
It's going to take a long time to get it back up. And they were doing good till the crash hit.
Yeah, and people get on that.
You don't have a crash when you've got index funds inside an annuity.
Yeah. It's almost like, you know, the when you're in an annuity, you don't have to get up in the middle of the night and see if there's anything left in your portfolio. And if you wake up the next morning and the market's crashed, you can sit back and relax and drink your morning cup of coffee and not have to worry about how are we going to recover from this, because it won't go down like that with an annuity. So
that's why everybody loves annuities, and there's billions of dollars in annuities. And it's selecting the right annuity company. You don't want one that goes up and down. Like if you go to the stock market and buy an annuity, that's a variable annuity. It's got mutual funds in it. You can lose money. But if you do an index annuity, a fixed index, it will not go down on you. So you don't have to worry about losing your principal. That's why people do this type of annuity, because their principal's always safe. And then it locks in your interest at the end of the year.
Mm.
At the end of your year, whatever you made, it's locked in. It's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And then it's got compound interest. You've got your beneficiaries right here. It doesn't have to be part of your estate. This is separate. It's got its own beneficiaries right there. Mm. And, you know, there's just so many good things about annuity. You know, the annuity companies are very wealthy. You know, the ones that we use, or the one that I like the best, is worth $60 billion.
Wow.
They've been in business over 100 years.
That's impressive.
And I mean, I'm impressed every time I do business with them.
Yeah.
And I've been licensed with them for 23 years.
Really? Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah.
Goodness gracious.
23 years.
And then on top of all that, you throw in those bonuses, and that's just extra money on top of everything else that people can make. So
it's, that's right. That 13% is great. So if you took the 13% that first year, then said, I'll just take the fixed rate with it, you're looking at over 16% first year.
Yeah.
Or if you want to make a lot more money, you'll say, I'll take the bonus and whatever it makes.
Yeah. I mean, this is just annuities. It almost like they're so incredibly boring because there's not a lot to do with them. You pretty much just set it and forget it. But you've got all the solid foundations. I mean, they've been in business for 100 years. You've been with them for 23 years. And both of those just by themselves, super credible. I mean, that's a feat right there. That's, you know, congratulations on all that. So then you have the safety, the conservativeness. You don't have to worry about risking the principal. And so it's just annuities are just incredibly profitable. It's good to know. And I didn't know that guy you were talking about, that's all he's ever done is this kind of thing. And
he's ever done, he said.
Yeah.
Was index funds.
Wow.
That's how he's made all this money.
That's huge. That's.
Yeah. I mean, I was listening to his story and I was so impressed by what he'd done with his life and how he'd made all this money.
Wow.
And it was different than Warren Buffett, but he, like he said, he just stayed with the indexes, and it's paid off very, very good for him over the years.
Yeah, it's just the consistency and the diversified portfolio and all that. It's one of those investments that's conservative. It's and it's steady, and you know, you're not going to all of a sudden get rich overnight. But you know, a lot of times when you get rich overnight, you can go broke overnight. At the same
time, that's right.
So
what goes up sometimes, if you're in the market, it's going to come down.
Yeah,
and it could be a hard landing.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, we still remember some of the lessons from 2008 and then the little glimpses of those like the other week when it pancaked. And so, you know, it's just like those are those little reminders that, you know, hey, everything that's going up may come down at some point. And so it's hard sometimes when people are riding that train and they get all the excitement of, ooh, look at all this, we're making money. And then it's hard to get off that train sometimes before it crashes. And so, you know,
that's exactly right. But if you're conservative, you know, you need to be in a conservative investment where you don't have to lay awake night worrying if you've got any money.
Yeah.
And as you get older, you're going to become more conservative and you're not going to want to lose your money.
Yeah. You don't want to.
So an annuity is, you know, it's set, it goes, but no matter what happens to you. And if you get too old to take care of your annuity, your children can come in and oversee it, and they don't have anything to do. All they have to do is say, okay, Faye, put it in this, put it in that, or leave it like it is.
Yeah.
And you know, we've got a couple of clients that their health has really declined this year.
Mm.
And their children come in and ask me about it. I said, it's all in annuities. You don't have to do a thing. And they were relieved.
Yeah.
You know?
I would imagine.
They weren't going to lose their money. They didn't have to guard it. It's mm-hmm. safe. And all they have to do, if they need money, is take it out once a year.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty simple.
There's not a lot that they have to get up to speed with and learn in a hurry. It's just, it's pretty much on autopilot. Set it and forget it and just let it do its thing, which, you know, easiness is, that's a big thing for a lot of people. So it really, annuities check off all the boxes for conservative investments. So this is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is...
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
And apparently we've been in the eggnog a little too much. We're a little later than usual, but every Saturday around this time we get into trivia. So what is our topic today?
We're going to talk about Henry Castro. Now, this is spelled H-E-N-R-I. Because he is French. Castroville, Texas is named after Henry Castro.
Ooh, cool.
I wonder how many people know that.
I didn't know
how Castroville got started.
Wow. Cool.
He was born in Bayonne, France. He was a French diplomat. He was Portuguese and Jewish. He immigrated to the United States, became an American citizen in 1827.
Wow.
And in 1838, he worked as a banker in France, and he sought to rescue a loan for the Young Republic of Texas. Then they appointed him general counsel for Texas by President Sam Houston.
Cool.
So he was going to recruit all these people to come to Texas through the land grants. And, you know, he traveled to Texas in 1843 to 1847. And, you know, in the Medina River Valley, west of San Antonio. So he went to the statehood and he said, okay, I want a land grant for this many people. And they issued him two land grants. And he was going to bring 600 families. And he had an option to bring 1,000. And the first 200 had to be settled by August 15th, 1843. And they gave him 600,000 acre land grant.
Wow.
Yeah. And then he got another land grant for 1,250,000 acres.
Wow.
West of San Antonio.
Oh, wow.
And it included Frio County, LaSalle, Medina, McMullen. And they called it Castro's Colony. But guess what? He didn't get them over here fast enough and didn't get it settled. He lost his land grant.
Oh, no.
And I didn't even know you could lose a land grant after they gave it to you.
I didn't either. It must be
but
time.
But anyway, he had an office in Paris in 1842. And they sailed to Galveston, Texas in 1843. And so in 1843, he went to Alsace, Baden, Switzerland. So all these people came from all these different countries. And the winter of 1843 in the spring, They came from Europe. They landed in Galveston. They went through New Orleans. and he went and met with them and escorted them by the Texas Rangers to inspect all this land that they'd gotten. And, you know, he lost some of it because they didn't get here on time.
I didn't know that a land grant could time out. Is that a thing?
I didn't either. I was shocked to learn that. If you don't get your people here and get them on the land, you lose your land grant.
Wow. I just thought when it was done. And however long it took, it took.
No. And then there was another $3,878,000, which is over 5,000 square miles, went to Henry Francis Fisher and Bashard Miller. And they received this grant, and they were to settle 1,000 people. And again, they were unsuccessful in getting them over here. And so they got their deadline extended. And so they sold their land grant to other people. And then this all these people kept selling them till they got their people here. And I could not believe that Texas had all these people from five different countries that settled in Castroville, Texas.
I had no idea. I didn't, and from France, too. I had no clue. I would have, of all the places where people would originate from, that's not one of them for some reason that I would have ever guessed.
And they said he became very famous. He was one of the most important impresarios of the Republic of Texas.
Really?
Because of his work with all these people.
Huh.
And but he died in Monterey. We don't know what he died of. He was 79. But he's buried in the St. Louis Cemetery in Castroville. And
wow.
He's the one that started Castroville, did the land grants, failed on a couple of them, the big ones, you know, because he couldn't get his people over here. But I'm shocked that all these people in these different countries, he went to them, and they all wanted to come to America.
Interesting.
So all these people in South Texas or every nationality from all these countries. How many people know that?
I had no idea there was so many cultural different cultural influences.
I thought it was all Spanish and, you know, because the name Castroville and Castro, and I had no idea these were French people.
I would have never guessed French. I mean, Castro.
And I thought Henry Castro was Spanish. I always thought that all my life.
Yeah. I mean,
but he's not. He's French.
I mean, geez, I think I'm just kind of, you know, you hear the name Castro and you think things like, you know, like Fidel Castro or something like that. You think, okay,
yeah,
Cuba
think,
or something.
Yeah. And I thought Castro was a Spanish name. And, you know, I had no idea. He was a French diplomat. And he was hired by the Republic of Texas.
Yeah.
And he raised all this money, got all these people over here. From every country.
Yeah.
I mean, Switzerland even.
Just gathered people up.
Amazing.
From all over.
Yeah. And so he gathered them all up, and they settled in the Medina Valley, west of San Antonio. And then Castro County in the Texas Panhandle. I didn't even know about that.
Yeah, I didn't either.
We have a Castro County in the Panhandle in addition to Castroville.
So there's two places named after him.
That's right.
Interesting. I'm surprised that he got so many people from so many different places. I'm thinking it would be much harder. You know, it'd be much easier to just say, hey, who y'all want to move to America? Come over here and get on the vessel and we'll sail across the sea. I would imagine it was much harder to go around to all these different countries and gather people up. It's like there must have been some kind of a plan. Was it like diversity? Was it what was the?
Well, he knew he had to have a lot of people. And remember, they had to have some money to pay their passage over here and to get started. So he went to, and, you know, he was well known. He was a banker in Paris. So I guess he knew a lot of people. So he went to all these different countries and solicited these people to come to America. And remember, this is in the 1800s. And heck, they landed in Galveston.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? Then they had to go overland to get there. And so it was a long journey, and he just didn't get them here quick enough, that first 200 people he had to have, so he lost his grant. And then on that second one, you know, they were unable to make it happen. And so then the other people got it, and they couldn't make it happen.
Yeah.
But the other one's got a $3 million land grant. Can you
wow.
imagine?
That's just
three million acres in Texas.
Wow. That's like the whole state of New Jersey.
There you go. There's New Jersey right there.
But much better.
But much, much better. But, and I, as I said, I've been spelling his name wrong all these years. I thought it was H-E-N-R-Y.
Yeah.
You know, because that would be a Texas name. But it was H-E-N-R-I because he was French. And I did not know that about the man. I knew where Castroville was, and I heard about it, but I didn't know that he worked for the Republic of Texas.
Yeah.
And he was general counsel for Texas.
Hmm.
And Sam Houston's one that appointed him.
Yeah, which is a big deal right there in itself. So, I mean, there's
yeah.
a...
And most of them came from Alice in eastern France, and they traveled, look how many years, from 1843 to 1847.
Yeah, a four-year span.
It took him that long to get enough people to make those land grants work.
Yeah.
I mean, there couldn't have been very many people in Texas.
You wouldn't think. I mean, it would be
or
probably
you wouldn't have had
sparse.
Millions of acres under the Republic, you know, that was available.
Yeah. I mean,
look at that one, 3,385,000 acres, and the other one was 1,200,000 acres. And it's just an amazing deal.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of unsettled land. I mean, you know, you try to do that now, and and none of us have been around when they were trying to, you know, settle, you know, places and create, like, villages and create, you know, townships and whatever. So, I mean, we don't really know how it actually was, but I can't imagine having that much space, you know, over 1 million that is unclaimed. And so... It's just that alone is just like, whoa. So, you know.
And I guess they didn't know where else to get their people. but they'd met this guy. He was working for the Republic of Texas. And they said, you know, we'll give you these land grants. You go back over there. You get all these people. And the land is theirs.
Yeah.
All you got to do to claim it is to be on the land.
Yeah.
And the first was just 500 or 600 people. And he couldn't get that many first deal.
Jeez.
So they kept bringing people over here. I had no idea that South Texas, they were from Switzerland, they were from France, they were from all these other countries and came to America.
Yeah, I'm like
I thought it was all either Spanish or you know, something else.
Yeah, yeah.
That was already here. I thought they were already here.
Yeah. I didn't know there were French origins. It really kind of changes my whole perspective on how, you know, parts of our state was founded. So very, very interesting. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
All right, real quick before we wrap, with a life settlement, in order to do this investment, one does need to be accredited. So first of all, what does that mean?
You must make $200,000 a year, or you must be worth $1 million, and that's without your house.
Okay.
And you must be accredited to do a life settlement.
Okay.
And so the risks are, if it goes over, you would have to pay premium. So you need to know what the premium is, and we give you that information up front in advance. The other thing is it's not liquid until it matures, and I think everybody knows that.
Yeah.
Now, on annuities, it's a little bit different. The requirements are you must have enough money to pay your bills. You must be able to show that. You must have either cash or savings accounts. But it's not as hard to get in it as it is the other.
Yeah. They'll check your ins and outs, but it's not quite as strict. So.
No, it's not as strict.
All right. So for people to get started or get some more information or, you know, maybe have some specific questions, they do need to call, make an appointment this coming week with the New Year's. Are you open on New Year's? I assume you're closed New Year's Day.
Yes, the next day we'll be open.
Cool. All right. So you'll be available to talk to people. So one last time, Faye, what is your phone number?
877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. 3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.